Okay. You were telling about being a fireman.
That's the only place you had those temperatures recorded without on your, you had two filings, losing it, and 9 meters, and then they extended to 12. And had two doghouses where the potentiometer box was. And there was a push button contact switch for the potentiometer. Push the button and you bounce your potentiometer to get the temperature. The only automatic recorder they had was the old L&M recorder that was on the furnace temperature of the heater. And they were in the tailhouse office. And the tailhouse was known as where the streams come off the towers come into this building, and they wasn't under pressure. The towers weren't under pressure. The heaters were under pressure. And you had lip glass on each side of this, and the stream came in, and you could keep check of the color of your product. And it runs from there to a pan tank, and the pan tank's only 10 feet high. So your stream went by gravity from the towers through the tailhouse lip boxes out to the pan tanks. In the unit storage.
Did you get more money being a fireman than you did being a cleanup woman?
Yeah, it paid
85 cents
an hour.
So that was your first operating job?
That was my first operating job, November 1925.
And that was how long after you went to work in there?
Well, I went to work first July 1925.
So it was worth quitting at Jansco Steel and taking it?
Yep. Certainly, I think they laid off 200 the week after I quit. And having probably one or 200 that got laid off. EMSCO did that. They, EMSCO, if you worked up, got a couple of nickel an hour raises, why then they lay off a bunch and bring a bunch in at the 50 cent an hour again.
Yeah, but the Pan American didn't do that.
No, they didn't. Play that way. There used to be a lot of places played that way, though. One of them was William Douglas Aircraft.
Not in the 1920s.
Huh?
Not in the
1920s. No, it was later.
Oh, okay.
No, not at that time. No, I haven't heard William Douglas Aircraft. Yeah. I skipped years.
Getting
over
the
word
there. Okay, you worked as a fireman. Was that just day work?
No, all operating jobs was shift work.
And how long did you work one shift and then?
It's not a week, changed every week. And then we went along. And I can't remember when we got the 2 days off. Several years later, but I can't remember what year it was, we got a 2 days off a week.
When you got 1 day a week off when you
just started? Right, in operations. Everybody got 1 day, we all got 1 day.
Did they shut down on Sundays or did you rotate your days off?
Oh, you rotated your days off. No. No, when we had the 1 day off, well, we stayed the same day. I had the Wednesdays off for 3 years. I mean, it was. So we kept the same day. And
when you were working shift work, when did you have time for any kind of social life?
Well, it kind of interrupts you. When you work the daytime, you have the evening, and the evening is your day off. And when you're young, you don't waste much time going to bed in the evening before you go out 11 o'clock. In the afternoon shift, what we refer to as 4 to 12, and usually about 3:30 to 11:30. Afternoon shift, that a lot of the younger fellows who have had their social period after they got off work at midnight. So they can go all week without having a little bit of fun.
What did you do for recreation during this time?
Did you
go to, is this the time that you were going to the church in Linwood that you talked about before?
Well, part of the time. Every time I was going there. Family groups used to go out. We used to go swimming a lot.
Where?
Well, down Belmont Shore and down to Lagoon and sometime down at Cary and sometime at Plums in Long Beach and sometime the one over in Ocean Park. And then we went to the movies. And, of course, I didn't, not being mixed up in athlete very much, I didn't. And there wasn't very many at that time of playing golf. And then we had parties at different one houses. They had dances, but I was never much on dancing. I never did get to be much of a dancer.
Is this the time that you met your wife?
Yeah, I met my wife in, what was it, 1926, I guess. Yes, I've been running around as a group in Linwood, but Wallace is going up there to the Christian Endeavor in the Methodist Church. I got acquainted with, well, it isn't, I got acquainted with my wife's sister and her husband-to-be. And,
how come if you lived in Florida, you went to church in Linwood?
Well, because the gang that I got, the ones that I got acquainted with the best, one of my best friends in Compton High School, lived in Linwood, in Delta.
Okay, we stopped it because the phone rang, and then I ran it back to cut out the loud noise of the phone, because the microphone is right by the phone. And now you're going to go on explaining how you happened to go to the church in Linwood.
Did you talk about going to the community church?
What community church?
The Linwood.
Yeah.
The Protestant church at Linwood. And which was run by Methodists. If you wasn't a Methodist lady, you was on the wrong end of the state. But we went to Christian Endeavor there, and my brother-in-law was president of Christian Endeavor. And my future sister-in-law was secretary.
What did you do at Christian Endeavor?
Well, it's Bible study, mostly. And then we had social get-togethers, parties. And we stayed at the church a good deal, quite a bit of time, quite a bit of time, I guess. Sometime when the children of the hierarchy of the church ducked out, and some of the rest of us were getting grandma's folks died, and some of the other kids had some folks car, and they'd hit out, and they'd go. You weren't supposed to go to shows. movie picture shows were off limits. They head up Long Beach Boulevard, and we'd tag them down behind, and they'd pull up and all pile out and start for the Lyric Theater. So then we'd pull up near them, and they'd see us, and they'd all pile back in the car and leave.
How come the
vendors
didn't approve of movies?
Well, most of them didn't approve of movies. I mean, the ones that the deacons or the holy ones or whatever it was called, you know, in the Baptist church, they were very much late. When they started the Baptist church, quite a number of Baptists, and they started this Baptist church, and they moved from Jack Baptist Church. They called it Linwood Baptist, but now they got another name for it. It's where my wife and I were married.
How come you changed from one church to the other?
Well, because the group that I was with went from the Methodist Church to the Baptist Church. For me, the only church that I was, and you can't say that. Well, I was supposed to be a member of the Christian Church in Long Beach. That's the only church that I ever was actually a member of. So, I went with my group. And my wife, Dom and I were married in the Linwood Baptist Church. And Reverend Reiser, and that's another reason, he was another reason why the young people went to the Baptist church, because of the minister they had there. He was the one that came up the hard way. He was originally an oil field worker in Bakersfield. And he went back to Bakersfield when he left Linwood.
So, essentially, you met your wife by going to church with people that you've known from high school.
I met my wife because the gang was going down to Newport Beach to swim and run around. And my wife's older sister, who was in the group that I was in, they were come lately because I was in the group first before they come out to California. She said, don't bring a date, I'll have a date for you. And the date turned out to be her sister, Wilma, who later became my wife. Although we didn't start going to study at that time. That's the way I met my wife, was actually not in the church, but because she wasn't going to Baptist Young People's meetings at that time. Let's see, God said about going to the Methodist Church in Compton and the Presbyterian Church in Compton.
What Presbyterian Church in Compton? Was that before or after the Baptist Church?
Well, the Methodist Church was after married and they moved to Compton.
Mm. Okay, so you got married in the Baptist Church of Linwood.
In Linwood.
And what year was that?
1929. 50 years, the 3rd of this coming August.
And you were working at Pan American?
Pan American. Been working there for 4 years.
And were you still a fireman?
Well, when we were married, I was 1929. Control board operator.
Was that a step up from being a fireman?
No. I was absorption plant. Went from the fireman to the gauges, to the board, to the absorption plant, to assistant stowman, and then the stowman.
And you did all that plus those other jobs in 4 years?
Huh? Well, I went from
You didn't stay out of job very long.
Well, yeah, you seem like you're on the job for a while. That's a 4-year period.
Well, Yeah, but that's a lot of jobs, a lot of different jobs.
Well, they're all in the same unit.
Yeah.
They're all interconnected.
Yeah, but it still seems like he moved around quite a bit. Was each one in advance?
Each one.
Money?
Each one was more money.
Okay, you went from fireman to... What was the next one up?
Yeah, it was paying the same money as the fireman was, so I didn't get no pay increase.
So it was still, why was it an advance then?
Well, because a lot of it was more tied in with the unit. You had to take care of all the products off of the unit that went out these pan tanks. And then you did the gauging and switching the tanks, and then...
What's gauging?
Well, it's taking in that time, it was taking a tape on a reel with a plumb bob on the bottom of it, and going and climbing the top of the tank and opening the gauging hatch and dropping the tape down to the bottom of the bob, hit the bottom of the tank, and then taking a reading on light oil, on black oil, like heavy oil, you had to, which we didn't have that much heavy oil on the unit. Why, you swing the pump bob till it hits the heavy oil, and then you use an outage gauge. You measure how far it is from a certain point in the gauge hatch down to the oil to tell what you got in the tank. And after you get tank full, it has to be sampled by the laboratory to see whether it's on test or not, and then you make arrangements through what was the main pump house. And they lined you up to what tank it was supposed to go in the field, and then you pumped it out to the field and secured it. Or you had to sample the tank. You had to take the sample and send the lab. And sometime they'd want to sample before it was full to see whether it was okay or not. Or a stream for sample. The reason you had the lab on the unit. And then they closed it down and sent everything to the main lab. I worked in the lab on the unit for a few months, running different types of distillation samples and flask viscosities.
So you were pumper gauger,
they call it.
Pumper gauger. And then what?
Then I went to the control board.
And what did you do there?
Control manually the flow of the oil through the heaters and back to the heaters. I mean back to the tower valve. And you have an inlet valve that you control manually to each cracking heater, and an outlet valve that maintained 1,000 pounds pressure against the heater. But that was released into expansion header, which released the pressure, and then the expansion header went into the towers, fractionated towers.
This was still a continually operating operation.
24 hours a day, 7 days a week.
This wasn't like a, when you did one batch and then let it out.
No, it was all continuous, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And then in the top of the heater, they had what they had called an economizer coil. The heat that was not used on the cracking tubes, and then put proof through those, and they come back through the proof section. And when crude oil, and the tension on the crude oil is controlled by the amount of flow of oil you put through it. And the temperature on the cracking heater is controlled by the fireman out on the fire line.
Okay, that was you worked on the board. Then what other job did you handle?
Absorption plant.
And what did you do in the absorption plant?
Well, it took the wet gases off the unit, which were full of hydrogen and sulfide. And
what?
And
you have to tell what an absorption plant is first.
Absorption plant is a unit that takes the wet gas, or the ones with the liquid molecules in it, and you put through what is called absorption oil, and it strips the liquid out of the gas and makes dry gas out of it. And on this unit, fire the wet gas off the top, which comes off the top of the tower, fractionating tower, went to a gas holder, such as you can see in Long Beach. It rises when it fills, rises and comes down. And that takes the surge off the unit because you got some pressures running through on it, and they run at a constant speed, so your change in rate in your gas was taken care of in the gas holder. And you had two traps on the line going to the gas holder that some liquid fell out into those traps. But those got dumped into themselves in tank, product tanks.
Okay, you were essentially an operator at the absorption plant then?
Yeah, on the absorption plant. Looked after the pumps, looked after the control, the weight, held the level, and took care of pumping out the absorption gasoline tanks, controlled the flow of the lean oil and fat oil, because you had to leak, the oil went into, the oil went over the absorption tower, the gas went up, the oil come down to it, which absorbed the wet and heavy molecules, and then that went into a heater, which went into a fractionating tower. And then your dry gas came off of that, and it soaks off the top, and you absorb the gasoline, which was very light, come off the bottom.
What did you do with the dry gas?
We burned.
What did Pan American do with the dry gas?
We burned what was needed in the heaters on the unit, and the rest of it went into the refinery fuel line.
To run the refinery?
We wanted to find it, but it was full of H2S. They didn't have an H2S absorption
unit
on
that. And you used the wet gas to blend with the other products to make gasoline?
The absorption gasoline.
Yeah. Okay. So essentially, the whole refinery was powered by this dry gas that the absorption plant took out of the crude oil.
Well, what we didn't, let's say with the crude stills, which was making gas also, and what we didn't, if we didn't have enough, we made up from the Southern Counties Gas Company, which is the parent company to the Southern California Gas Company.
So you didn't have any excess?
No, we never had any excess.
Where did you know?
If you had excess gas, that went out of flare in later years. I mean.
Do you know where the crude oil was coming from?
Well, the crude oil came from the Wilmington field, from the Long Beach field, from Kettle Hills, from Elk Hills, from Bakersfield, Ventura,
okay.
That's all that comes to mind right now.
Okay. I was just wondering what it was Pan American.
Well, it started building the Pan American refinery, I think they started the layout in 1922, and actual construction started in 23. And it continued under the Pan American until the Richfield Oil Company of California tried to buy it out, bought it out in 1929. Then they went broke in a year. And that one's in receivership for 7 years. And Sinclair and City Service, Con Local Bankers, was reorganized under them into Richfield Oil Corporation.
Anyway,
let's get back to the absorption plant. Where did you go to work after you left the absorption plant? Well, they shut the absorption plant down. And I went back and I took the...
How come? Were they getting less?
Well, they had to sell the absorption plant from the refinery.
Yeah.
And they shut the absorption plant down on the units.
Oh,
both the crude unit and the cracking unit. They built a, what they call the absorption plant, they call it, they built it on what they call the hill. It was up on a little bit higher over north and west of the big house. And, so, then they, and they took the Charleston town operators to pump and gauging.
Well, now, they
come
backwards?
Off, yeah, they come off the board. They were 2 steps backwards. So they come off the board. But in the meantime, they made some boiling room and they were then pumping and gauging. So that's why they said that they wanted the absorption plant operators to be on the pump and gauging job. The pump and absorption plant operator will leave the assistant stillman. When the assistant stillman wasn't there, the absorption plant operator moved the assistant stillman. But they cut the pay to the pump and gauger pay, which wasn't as much as the board pay. So then they, after much fussing and whatnot, they made arrangements and they paid the upper gauger more than paid the board, which was at 2 cents an hour, was what the absorption plant operator was getting more than the board when to start with.
Now, how many of these, did you have all these jobs before 1929 when
Pan American
sold out?
Yes.
Did you have any more that we haven't mentioned yet?
Oh, wait a minute. 1929.
What did Stillman do?
Well, Stillman had charge of the unit. He was the man in charge. He was on the hourly payroll in those days. He was the only man, just like the foreman. He was the man in charge of the operation of the unit night or the daytime. Of course, you had the day foreman there in the daytime.
You mean the pumpers and gauges and all that stuff
weren't,
didn't get paid by the hour?
We all were paid by the hour. The stillman was paid by the month. The rest of them all paid. Everybody else was paid by the hour. The stillman got a vacation, the only man to get a vacation. Nobody else got vacations at that time.
But you were just an assistant stillman.
I was relieved assistant stillman. I never did. When they shut it down, I was working assistant stillman, but I actually didn't have this. I wasn't rated assistant stillman because that was, I was taking the place I was supposed to come back.
During
the time that it
was
the Pan American, was there ever a labor union around for oil workers? Did you ever know that? Well, that's the union was strongest up in Bakersfield when they had that strike, I believe it was in 1924. And the oil workers, and they lost the strike, and the oil workers union was pretty flat for a while. And it didn't come to fore until 1933, when President Roosevelt came in there and started.
So, during the time that you worked for the Pan American Refinery, there wasn't much labor union activity?
There wasn't any union activity that I know of.
Okay.
Any members, anybody belonged to the union, I knew a member that belonged to the union up in Taft, but I don't know of anybody. So there weren't anybody, but what I mean, there was plain known to me that they were union members.
And this
didn't change
when the Richfield came in there. The situation with the union didn't change when the Richfield came in.
It didn't change. No, it didn't change until later on, first term,
1933. Okay. What did change when the Richfield took over?
Well, the first thing, they started getting rid of factory, all the management people, administration people, and then they started, if they could get them broke in, they started getting rid of the operators and maintenance department people, everything, and they was just laying them off. So at the time, up to the time that for a lot of years I went into receivership.
Did they just hire new people, or did they bring in people
that
went to Richfield?
Well, mostly they were brought in, replacing the people from Richfield. And the Richfield men lost their jobs without work, too. And both Richfield and Pan American, some of them lost and then got back in, but they didn't get back in until 180 days was up from that. If you got back in 108 days, you maintained your seniority. And a number of them lost out quite a bit on pension on account of that, I think. But,
did you have a pension plan before 1929?
No, but our pension, we were fortunate that there wasn't like so many companies have today and in the recent times. Each company, each setup, we maintained our original hiring date with Pan American or with Richfield. The Richfield people maintained. So, in Atlantic Richfield, the present company, did the same thing. So, the pension purpose of my pension time went to July 1925 with Atlantic Richfield, although I only worked for them about 2 years and a half. But the only thing that saved Father Lee and I stayed on, and several others, and then more came back, was that McDuffie was appointed receiver for Pan American Western. And McDuffie was a friend of Delahini. And McDuffie started calling back Pan American men and laying off some Richfield men. So, who knows what would happen if it continued the way it was going.
Yeah, and was the receivership
a
result of the Depression?
Well, it was a receivership because Richfield went broke.
So, during the Depression, then you had a job?
Yeah, I worked.
Unlike some other people?
Yeah, I worked. I have never been, outside of 2 weeks, I haven't been out of a job since June of 1922. Anywhere in between the got laid off in December of 24 with that lumber company. And when I went to work at Pan American, I lost 2 weeks in that.
And you didn't have a pay cut or anything as a result of the Depression?
No, we never had a pay cut. We didn't get pay raises, but we didn't have any pay cut.
But you must have known that other people who couldn't find jobs.
Well, that's one thing that the master mechanic from Richfield, the Richfield Oil Company of California, from Hines, he used to make it as tough as he could for all Pan American people. One of his favorite sayings was, "You better snap into it, we got bad men and you waiting outside the gate." So we were the people outside the gate. And all going to receivership, one time come out,
down all by Richfield. They're going to close down the refinery and just use the sales, because Richfield was never a proper company. And it never come to pass. They kept going out, thinking, well, the gates would be closed on us. And that went on during the Depression, during this 7 years of receivership. I never knew where we were at.
So you did keep your job,
and what job did
you keep? What, after
Richfield took over? The
bulletin
job? Well, after, yeah, I was on the board.
And how long did you continue doing that?
I worked there. I don't know, for sure, I was on the board, yeah, because that's when. And I haven't not stayed on the figures in there anymore. When they set the cell plant down on the hill, I could find out. But I worked this. When they shut down, I was working with Swiss and Stillman, they say, filling, and I didn't have the rating. It was just stuff. And then I went to work on the board of a new combination crude and cracking unit.
Okay, maybe we should be clear about this. The Pan America refinery that you worked at was at Watson.
Right.
And when Richfield and Pan America became associated, whether it was in the merger and then after that in the receivership, people came from Richfield that had a refinery at Pine. And so the operations were sort of consolidated between these two refineries.
Well, they shut down the Pine refinery.
And that's where the people came from that went to work at Watson. Okay. So you worked...
It's a little new, a new superintendent.
Yeah.
Come in right away. Pinero, Mr. Lyle's place.
And, okay, so you went to work on a different unit when they shut down the
insertion plant? No. They shut it down before.
Yeah, okay.
Before Sinclair Company and City Service.
Yeah, okay. When you went to work on the new unit, what did you do? That's when you went back to
seeing
a...
I was on the control board on the new unit.
And how long did you continue doing that?
Ooh. A couple of years, about 2 years, I guess.
So you didn't change jobs as quickly after that?
No, because you were at the
start. Okay, so what did you do after you left working on the control board?
Went to operator, which had been the people that sits and spinning on the old type, on the old plant.
Okay, and was operator still an hourly job?
Right, all the jobs on the units were hourly jobs except from the ship foreman. We usually had several units.
Were you getting more money by now or not?
Oh yeah, it's... was picking up for, let's see, I think, well, it started on a board, I think it was $1.10 an hour, on the, which was more than a computer.
And was this the time that the union came in, or?
No, the union came in right after, started building up right after the, 33, I joined the union in 34, that's when some of them going a lot of fire 33 yards, a little bit behind quite a few of them.
Did you think it would do a good job for the workers?
Huh? Well, I think the unions as a whole have done a lot for the workers over the years. I didn't always agree with policy and the way it's supposed to go, but
well, what did you think about
the oil workers' union
when it first started organizing
and
the refinery you
worked at? Well, it didn't get any place for quite a while.
How come?
Well, the unions and the new unions and all, they just didn't have a crop there in most places except in the older craftsmen's union and whatnot that were around.
Did people who worked in the refinery belong to some of these other unions? Craft unions?
No. Well, some of them did, but they don't, I don't know where they kept it up or not, because they worked as a company employee, not as a craftsman coming in from, I don't know if you know what I mean or not. Like nowadays, they're actually most of these mechanics and whatnot, they're hired in as a, maybe even through the union hall. But most of the craftsmen were represented by the union, the oil workers' union.
So, but you didn't think very much of the oil workers.
There was one of them. Which one? There was one that didn't. I don't remember which one it was now. The machinists, or I don't believe it was the lawyers. It may have been the machinists. There was one of them. One of the craftsmen's union in there that wouldn't join the oil workers' union. But I don't remember which one it was, but they said they already had it. It might have been electricians.
Anyway, you didn't think
very
much of the oil workers' union when they started organizing
in
the refinery?
Well, I wasn't what you'd call enthusiastic over the union deal, or particularly the people who were mostly involved in it.
How come?
Well, I didn't like their methods, and I didn't particularly, I say, some of the people weren't, you know, probably never was what some people would call a good union man, because you used to always, you gotta fight them, you gotta make them do this, you gotta make them do that, and I always felt like you should try and confer on it before making the demand, telling you gotta do this, we're not gonna have that. And that's the way that most of them work, and the way 3% of them work right now.
You mean union organizers then told who to fight and to tell people what to do? The people, who did the people in the union want?
Well, Cody was the head at the time of AFL, when it was AFL, before the AFL picked the oil workers out, and they went CIO.
Yeah.
And then a couple of his promoters, and he was supposed to go out and get members that spent more time in the union hall out north, was called Curly Thompson, and the other one was called Whiskey Geiger, because he was drunk most of the time. And that, when everybody gets talking, either Geiger or Thompson or Cooper would get up. And we had the company, each one had a group, you know, a union. There was a company, like the Richfield group in the union, would have